Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Ryan, it's been a long time. I really appreciate you coming back on as we I never know how to talk about this time of year, and you and I've been doing this for about the same amount of time, which means forever. SEC media days roll around and everybody goes, "Well, football's here," and it's like, "Well, it kinda, but not really." I mean, it ends, and then there's another full 2 weeks before anything of significance occurs in terms of football practices beginning or whatever. I mean, it's still a little while before football gets here. It's sort of the warm-up to the warm-up for football. And I don't know about you, but I go to SEC Media Days every year, and every year I leave going, I'm not doing that again next year. It's pointless. And then I go back. So anyway, welcome to the almost start of football season.
Yeah, you know, it used to be. This hasn't been that long ago, so I'm not going to sound that old, but, you know, it used to be like the last few days of July. Like, I can remember this event being like July 25th, 26th, 27th, somewhere
yeah.
in there.
Yeah.
And then you would have a weekend, and then camps would open the next week. I mean, the next week would be the first week of August, and you'd have camps opening. So it really then was like the legitimate kickoff. But, and I'll credit the SEC for doing this a couple of years ago when they said, you know, everybody does it the same week. We could move it up and not be doing it the same week everybody does it, and also be on the All-Star Game week and have the stage all to ourselves. And that was a genius move by them. Obviously, they don't get the All-Star break this year. It's a week earlier. But I thought it was a smart move on the SEC's part to do that. I don't guess I really care when they do it. It's going to happen. It's going to be 4 days either way. So they could do it in April for all I care. I'm fine either way.
I anticipate an announcement that they're moving this probably to Dallas next year. Is that what you're hearing as well?
Yeah, I think for at least a year. I think if Greg Sankey and the SEC had their way, they would mix Birmingham, mix Hoover in maybe every other year, every 3 years. I don't think it will permanently leave Hoover, but I also don't think Hoover can provide any more for the SEC what they truly want in this event. And they had that in Atlanta last year. They will have that in Dallas, but what they won't have is the feeling that you're taking the city over. We're both there in Atlanta. It was all the same to me, but it wasn't by any stretch of imagination the biggest thing going on in Atlanta, and it won't be in Dallas either. So I think the SEC has to determine how much do you want to be the main thing going on in the city where you are, and how much is it worth it? I mean, are you getting more coverage in Atlanta by having the event in Atlanta, or more coverage in Dallas by having the event in Dallas? I don't know the answer to that. The SEC obviously does. And I also don't know what they want this event to become. Do they want it to become like the Super Bowl media day, where you could have a portion of it in some sort of arena where a crowd is able to attend and, you know, maybe listen in to some of it? I don't know. I don't know if that's what they want. If that's what they want, they can't do that at Hoover. But they may not want it to become that. I do think you're right. This thing will, in all likelihood, be in Dallas in 2020.
The one thing I do enjoy about Hoover is I do love the whole escalator thing up and down, and watching. I still enjoy watching the stupid lobby. I don't know why. I'm not making fun of the people down there, because, quite frankly, those are our peeps. So we need those kind of people, to listen to your radio, to listen to my podcast, to subscribe to my site, etc. But it is an amusing spectacle at times, especially on Alabama's day.
Oh, it's something else. There's no doubt. It is crazy. It's a show in and of itself. And just watching people stare up at the escalator to see, you know, oh, are those Nick Saban's feet? No, that's just a normal member of the media. I'm just waiting for somebody that they want their autograph to come down the escalator. It really is fun. And you know, there are a lot of kids there. And I will say this. I will give Gus Malzahn and Nick Saban an immense amount of credit for this. They stick around and sign a ton of autographs when they're finished. And I know it's got to be, you know, a fairly mentally taxing day, putting up with all the same questions over and over and over and over again. But those guys, I will watch it. They take care of the kids. They make sure the kids get the stuff signed. And the adult that's dragging around a gym bag full of mini helmets that's going to go straight to eBay may not get it signed. But those two coaches do a really good job of taking care of the kids when they're there. So I will credit them for that.
So from your standpoint, you guys are down there. What, I guess you'll be there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or maybe Monday through Thursday?
Yeah, our station will be there all 4 days, but the first day doesn't start until the afternoon, so we're finished at 10. We're finished at 10, so we won't go until we'll save our entrance for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
How much extra preparation do you have to do as a – I mean, you guys get huge ratings. You have a very successful show. This is a week when people are even more dialed into your show than normal just because of all the guests that you'll have. How much extra prep do you have to do for a week like this, getting ready for radio, just for some of the interviews that you'll get? You know, you don't, if I remember correctly back when I did it, and I just kind of observing it, it's kind of impossible for you guys to completely plan who you're going to get and when you're going to get them, right? I mean, there is a certain degree of off the cuff, and you're either ready to talk to, you know, Matt Luke or Joe Moorhead or Dan Mullen or whoever. You're either ready to talk to those people or you're not. And if you're not prepared, you have a chance to have a pretty sloppy interview.
Well, and I'll give you a great example of that, and you'll appreciate this, and your listeners will too. So last year in Atlanta, we're sitting there, and I don't know if the Ole Miss media guy got confused or if he was just bringing them to all the stations, but it was I'm blanking out. Sean Rawlings, right? The center? Is that his name?
Sean Rawlings, yeah.
Sean Rawlings. And he sits him down. And fortunately, you know, I had looked at who Ole Miss was bringing and had read up a little bit. And he was a fantastic interview. I don't know how much you had a chance to talk to him.
But a lot.
He seems like a great kid.
Yeah, absolutely. One of those guys that when he leaves, you know, fans don't think about it the way writers do. You know, when a guy like Sean Rawlings leaves, you're like, damn, man, that's a really good quote that's gone out the door.
Yeah, he can fill up my notebook.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was a really good interview. So that was one of those where you're like, man, I'm glad I was at least familiar with him and knew him. I didn't know that. We had no idea he'd be sitting down. We were just in a break, and they sat him down, and we interviewed him, and it was a terrific interview. So, yeah, I mean, you got to be prepared for that kind of stuff. You at least have to have some sort of working knowledge, because a lot of times the media guy will assume you know who's sitting down with you, and you don't have the first idea who's sitting down with you. So you got to be prepared. You got to figure that one out on the fly sometimes if it's not the head coach.
Here's my funniest story along those lines. It actually happened on the Ole Miss beat two or three years ago. They brought a kicker in, and none of us knew who it was. It was like in spring. None of us knew, is this the kicker or the punter? We're all sort of asking We're all sort of asking these questions, and we're all kind of looking at each other like, we don't know who this is, you know? And you know, he referred to kicking the ball, and someone was like, so kind of take us through the way you kick. It was great. I wish I could remember exactly who that was. That person left and we just howled. I mean, it was so funny. It's like that game, you know.
But, you know.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, you know, our show was one, too. None of us played the game. So we're not going to kill you with that. So our interviews are going to be better if we can find the backstory to people, you know. Matt Luke's backstory, Joe Moorhead's backstory. You know, look, we know Saban and Malzahn. They've been on tons of times. But, you know, I tell you, guy, we have a lot of fun with Kirby Smart. And we got a good relationship with Kirby from the time he was in Tuscaloosa. And he listened. He wouldn't admit it at the time. He does now that he listened to our show. But what's funny is his wife listened every day. And he would say, God, I'd come home, my wife was saying, the Jocks Roundtable was talking about such and such. He goes, so I figured I better listen to your show because that's all she would tell me about, talk to me about. So he really liked us. So even at Georgia, we've still kept a pretty good relationship with him. And But I think part of it too is he knows we're not gonna try to break down X's and O's with him. We have them on and we just have fun. And so, you know, kind of trying to find the backstory to some of these coaches to get them to maybe pull down the defense shield for a little bit and not talk football and just talk about life is far more interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm the same way. You know, and it's so hard to get them to do that now. Everybody's kind of so buttoned up You know, the format of your show and the people you do your show with, it almost forces that. They either, for the subject that you're talking to, they either sort of let their guard down and have some fun, or it's a miserable interview experience.
Well, and I don't know if you heard it, but in April, there's a local Champions Tour, Senior Tour golf tournament here, the Regents Classic, and Nick Saban plays in it every year. And he came on and we just randomly found out he was a Game of Thrones fan. Now, I didn't watch the show, but Jim Dunaway and Lance Taylor, I do my show with, they did. And we do most of the interview on Game of Thrones. And Saban, you could tell he loved it because I'm not having to answer questions about players and expectations and quarterbacks and things like that. So, I mean, he just gives us this amazing breakdown of Game of Thrones. And so, I think the coaches appreciate that when you give them a chance to actually get away from it a little bit and just talk about things that interest them. And most of the time their answers are so scripted and regurgitated that you get far more interesting conversation if you do it that way.
I'm curious, what was the sort of listener reaction to you guys getting the Alabama coach on? And because look, I'm somewhat familiar with that market. There is a segment of that market that they, by God, they want their football conversation when you get the football coach on. What was their reaction to him talking about Game of Thrones?
Most people got a kick out of it. Now, some people didn't watch the show. And you're right, you're going to get the "I can't believe y'all didn't ask him about Tua's knee" people. The other thing too is we get a lot of leeway because we've been together almost 10 years now. We're celebrating our 10th anniversary. So in 10 years, they figured us out. They know what kind of show we are. And I think we've probably weeded out the people that can't deal with a sports talk show like today. What did we talk about today, Neil? Hang on. We get off on so many tangents. I'm trying to remember the tangent we got off on today. One was whether or not you eat leftovers. And what was the other one? Gosh, we had a fun conversation about something. Oh, underwater welding. Randomly started talking about people that are underwater welders. And they have a significant death rate. Like, it's a very dangerous job.
Yeah, I would think
they're underwater with electricity. I mean, yeah. It's a dangerous job.
Stands to reason.
Sharks. We thought there might be a lot of shark attacks.
Well, tell me about the – because I'm curious about the leftovers thing. Because
– oh.
Are you anti-leftovers?
I'm not anti, but I just don't do it a lot. Like, my wife knows if she boxes it up and puts it in the fridge, I'm probably not going to touch it. Now, there are a couple things that we talked about. Everybody loves Thanksgiving leftovers. Like, I can go the full weekend on Thanksgiving leftovers. I can eat that probably for, like, 5 days.
I'm exhausted of it by Friday afternoon.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. Totally done with it by Friday afternoon.
Yeah. Here's what I do. So you do the big spread on Thursday, right?
Yeah.
And then Thursday night, it's normally about halftime of the Egg Bowl. I make turkey and dressing sandwich. So I take some turkey and heat it up and some dressing and heat it up and some mayonnaise. That's all I put on there. Turkey dressing and mayonnaise. And I love it, man. I eat one of those and then I'll normally get some sweet potato casserole and some mac and cheese to go with it. So that's my Thursday. And then Friday, we have to do a live show because it's Friday before the Iron Bowl. So then I come home and I'm always eating the leftovers for lunch Friday. And then normally we'll do something different for dinner. And then Saturday's Iron Bowl, so I'm going all day. So I don't really get it on Saturday. So to be fair, I probably only eat it for 2 days myself.
Yeah, this year the Egg Bowl's in Starkville, so I'll do Thanksgiving on Friday, I guess. I don't even know. I hadn't even thought about it. It covering a game on Thanksgiving Day is such an odd thing. I don't think I'll ever get used to it. And then when you have it, this is where I reveal just how much of a lush our whole family is. So Thanksgiving is typically the holiday where both of my brothers come to Oxford. And,
right.
You know, Thanksgiving dinner for us, it usually means we're going to open some bottles. And
yeah.
You can't do that if you've got to go cover a game at 6:30. So I think last year we did Thanksgiving the next day, or maybe we all, yeah. I don't even remember. Isn't that funny? I'm not going to sit here and complain. I get paid to write about sports. It's no big deal. It's one of the things that you're going to work some holidays, but having that game on Thanksgiving Day is kind of a Thanksgiving killer. I mean, I'm sure for fans it's not. For fans, like if you live in, you know, like this year the game's in Starkville, so if you live in Madison or Oxford or something, and you're an Ole Miss fan or you're a State fan or whatever, and you're not going to the game, it's perfect. You have Thanksgiving dinner, and then, you know, you turn on the game that night, and that's awesome. But man, when you've got to drive over there and cover the game and drive back stuff, it's a holiday killer.
So we here's what we do. So my in-laws live like 5 minutes away. My parents live about an hour away, and we alternate. So 1 year we're at my in-laws on Thanksgiving Day. 1 year we're at my parents on Thanksgiving Day, and so I saw it was back, I guess, sometime in March or April. The report came out from Miami that the Dolphins were going to play the Cowboys in the Thanksgiving game. And so I immediately text my wife. I'm on the air at the time. I immediately text my wife and say, hey, have you thought about maybe just inviting everybody to our house for Thanksgiving this year? Because I want to make sure I'm at my house for the Dolphins, okay? And so she immediately calls me in a break and says, well, what are you doing? I said, what do you mean, what do you do? She goes, I know you're not worried about who's doing Thanksgiving where in March, so tell me what's going on. Well, the Dolphins reportedly are playing the Cowboys. And her response was, oh, my God, Ryan. And I said, well, I know, but I want to be at home. So let's make sure everybody's at the house. It turns out the Dolphins are not playing the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, so we're in the clear. So I don't care where we do it.
Yeah. My son's gotten into the NFL, and so – not a lot, but he's into the Bears a lot, and I think the Bears play on Thanksgiving again this year. So, last year that was fun because we watched the Bears play whoever they played, and then, you know, I got ready and covered the game. But I don't know. That's a fun. I love that holiday because it's everybody loves that holiday. You eat and then you watch football, but when you have to cover it, it negates it to the point where really, as we're sitting here having this conversation, I can't remember last year Thanksgiving. I don't remember what we did. I don't know if we went to my parents or what we did. It just completely changes everything. My thing with leftovers is I don't mind leftovers at all, except I don't – like if I have something on Tuesday night, if I'm going to have it again on Wednesday night, we've got to repurpose it. We've got to do something totally different with it. I can't have the same meal. Like – we did it the other day. I did a brisket for 4th of July, and it was really good. It was one of the first times I've ever done it exactly right, and it was an A+. I hit a home run for the first time, and a couple of days later there was still some brisket left, and we didn't feel like cooking. You know, it's 117,000 degrees outside, and we chopped it up and made like brisket tacos out of it, and stuff.
Yeah.
And that was great because it was like having a different meal. But yeah, if you're eating the same thing or it's the same meal you had the night before, I'll almost skip dinner before I do that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've already had it. Now, if it's really good at dinner, I might have it for lunch the next day, but I don't want it for back-to-back dinners. I need that next dinner to be something new. I need a new taste there.
First world problems, man. First world problems.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Isn't it?
All right. So, the media days start on Monday. Is there anything we're listening for from Greg Sankey when he does his state of the league thing? I mean, are we listening for him to talk about in any shape, form, or fashion Ole Miss being, you know, out of sanctions now? The Our Lady of the Lake scandal at LSU, is he going to reference anything, or is it just going to be propaganda?
Yeah, I think he's got to be asked about the LSU situation, and I would imagine his answer is, you know, that we're working with the school, or right now, you know, it's a school issue. Or, I mean, it's going to be a very wordy no comment, because I don't really know what he could say at this moment. But that certainly is interesting to watch. I feel like the biggest SEC news came out from Destin. I mean, the allowing the schools to sell alcohol at games and the more open, transparent officiating, to me, were the two. I don't know what else would be there that you could top that with. I don't know what else you could top that with. So
why are so many UTV? Why are so many schools, in your opinion, including the two in the state in which you work? Why and listen, Ole Miss is dragging its feet to the point now where I don't think it's going to happen. Had Ross Bjork stayed here, it was going to happen, absolutely. But he's at Texas A&M now, and I don't think it's going to happen here. And I mean, it's my opinion. I can't support this with fact, so I'll state that outright. I think this is kind of a Baptist church type people sort of flexing their muscles about something. I really do. I think it's that simple. I don't think it's a liability thing. I think it's an image thing. Why do you think so many schools are looking at what would clearly be a major revenue producer, a major revenue stream, and sort of eschewing it?
I don't know. It's very confusing to me because what I've been left to wonder is who voted yes for this. So I'm assuming the schools voted to do this. Greg Sankey didn't just do this on his own.
No.
So the schools voted to do it, and then all the schools said, yeah, we're not going to do it. Oh, I don't know why everybody voted yes. I have no idea, but I am a little surprised by it. Yeah, I mean, the most surprising, I would have thought, I think everybody would have thought LSU, you wouldn't have left Destin before LSU announced they were doing it. So it's been very puzzling to me. I don't know. I'm with you. It's an obvious revenue generator. I don't know if nobody wants to be the first one in the pool. There are other schools that have done this nationwide. It's not as if you'd be the first school in the nation to do it.
No,
I'm not really sure why everyone's waiting.
I mean, I'll be honest. I thought that before anybody got out of the state of Florida, they would have been on the phone with the people at Budweiser and Miller and Coors saying, start bidding.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's not that simple, but I swear I thought it was going to move quickly, and I'm kind of stunned by it, really, because I interrupted you a minute ago when you talked about television deals and such. There's so much two things. Cord cutting is becoming mainstream, and two, attendance is down. Attendance is down everywhere. It's down all over the country. It's down in the SEC. Getting people to buy tickets is not hard yet. Getting people to actually come to the games when they have the tickets is getting harder. It's even getting harder at places like Alabama, where they're a national title contender every year, where Las Vegas sets the over-under at 11.5, meaning the question is can Alabama lose one game? I mean, at a school like that, I mean, it's I won't say it's difficult to fill the stadium, but it's challenging. And given that, I'm kind of floored by it, really. To me, it seems like a natural thing. I mean, people are used to – I mean, you know, Carson and I are going to Chicago next weekend. There will be people all in Wrigley having a beer, watching the Cubs and the Padres. I mean, that's just, you know, no big deal. You go to a pro game. You go to a bowl game a lot of times, and there's beer in the stadium. You can get whatever. The truth is, it's a more sober stadium than when you, quote, make it dry, and everyone is smuggling whiskey and vodka and such into the stadium on a hot day.
Yeah, it is puzzling. I don't know really the reasoning behind it, but to your point, you know, the new athletic director in Tuscaloosa, Greg Byrne, I'll give him credit. I mean, he's one of the first things he did was a questionnaire to season ticket holders, to people that are part of Tide Pride. What would make your game day better in Tuscaloosa? He came on our show. Alabama Coleman said, you know, hey, would you consider having Greg Byrne on? He's doing this course. Lots of people fill out the questionnaire. He genuinely wants a response to this. And, so we allow listeners to go ahead and say, here's what you want at Bryant-Denny Stadium. We'll tell Greg Byrne. And it's interesting. Alcohol is one of the big choices. And, you know, at the time he kind of danced around that because this decision hadn't been made. The other one is dependable Wi-Fi or cellular service. People want to be able to watch other games. I mean, it's, you know, it's just funny what was a big deal 20 years ago in the stadium, or what's a big deal now wasn't even a factor 20 years ago in a stadium. Listen, I stay home. I could go to any game I want to in this state, Alabama or Auburn, and I choose to stay home. I'll go to some of the bigger ones. I'll go to every Iron Bowl. But the product is too good at home on Saturday for me to leave. I have zero interest in leaving every Saturday because the product, college football, gives you ending after ending that is entertaining. Yeah. And they are just stacked one on top of the other. And I'll be honest with you, Neil. I start at 11 o'clock in the morning, and I go until that late ESPN game, the late Pac-12 game is done. And when it's done, I would watch more. I never get to the end of that day and say, okay, I've had all the ball. If there were another game kicking off at 2 a.m., I would stay up until 6 a.m. watching it.
Yeah, I shouldn't say this out loud, but it's true. It's kind of like you said, you know, Ole Miss will get an open date or two, and I won't get to do it this year because I think we'll go visit our daughter in Fayetteville. But last season, you know, they had an open date or whatever, and I got up early that day and got my run in or whatever and lit the grill, and I have a TV outside, and it was nice weather. And I remember kind of thinking, you know, you watch the game, and if that game got boring, you flip to a different game, and you could flip to a different ending, and there was never a line for the restroom, and the beer was cold, and I never had to wait in line for it, and it was right there, and when I wanted to take a break from it, I did, and then I came back. You know what I mean? And I thought, I can remember thinking to myself, man, this would be hard to compete against.
It is. It's too good. Listen, 20-year-old me would kill me for saying this, but it's so much better at home. I used to love going to games, and I still do. I mean, I go to the Iron Bowl. I go to Bama, LSU, Auburn, Georgia, you know, when they're big games. But I'm telling you, man, those first few Saturdays when you've got those cross, you know, those Nevada conference games, God, that is so good on TV. I cannot wait. I mean, it is such a good TV product. And the NFL is too. But college is so different. The NFL, the end of that early slate is terrific. That last hour of football in the red zone and that early slate is so good. College gives you three or four of those a day.
Yeah.
The end of the early slate, the end of the 2:30 slate, the end of the primetime slate, the end of the 8 o'clock slate. I mean, it's just so good on TV. It's just impossible to give it up.
And you're right about the Wi-Fi in stadiums. It's one of the things with the college kids that no one really talks about. If you don't have the Wi-Fi where it really works and the college kids can get on their social media, they're out.
Yeah.
They're out because they
want
social
media and
they got to be able to post their Instagram pictures and stuff, and people can make fun all they want, but hey, it is what it is. I mean, it's like if you don't have reliable Wi-Fi in an NFL stadium, people aren't going to go, because a lot of the people that go to NFL games on Sunday, whether this is good or bad, right or wrong, whatever, doesn't matter. It is what it is. They are also playing fantasy football. And if they can't keep up with their fantasy team, then it's a miserable experience, even if they're there at Panthers Bucks in Charlotte on Sunday. Even if the game's a nail biter, they need to know that their running back who plays for the Bills just scored a touchdown in the game against the Jets and gives them the win that week. And if they can't know that, it's not a pleasant experience, and they're going to watch from home.
And the unspoken one that you will never hear an athletics director say, but this is true, is there's a significant part of your attendance that has money not only on the game that you're at, but on many other games.
Yeah.
They're wanting to keep up with that too. I mean, the gambling interest is the reason TV ratings are what they are. Some of those people are at games too, and they want to be able to keep up with.
Yeah,
you know, no, they're at -5, and that game's coming down to the end.
They're in Tuscaloosa for Alabama, Mississippi State, and they've got $250 on, you know, Arkansas plus 16.5 against Georgia, and I'm obviously just making stuff up. Well, man, when that Alabama game, when in their mind it's over, and they can't get Wi-Fi to find out what the hell's happening in Athens or Fayetteville, they're out. That's how it works, and that's when the stadium's empty like that. It's not. And then, you know, and then like last year, I can remember. And I'm not trying to rip the product. It's just I think about like what Scott Woodward at LSU encounters. You know, they're trying to get people at Tiger Stadium to stay. And last year, Ole Miss played there. It was an 8 o'clock game. It's always an 8 o'clock game. And I got out of the stadium at, I don't know, it was 12:15, 12:30. It might have even been 1 o'clock. And I remember I was walking in the freaking rain back to my truck. And I can remember thinking, well, at least I can get to my hotel room quickly. I was staying at a Hampton Inn or something just right there off of college on 10 or 12, whatever that is. And I thought, well, at least I can get to my hotel quickly. I can get a shower, drink a beer, go to sleep. I was in bumper-to-bumper traffic.
Yeah.
2 hours after the game was over, in the middle of the night, and I remember thinking, "Why? I mean, I'm getting paid for this. Why would anyone volunteer for this?"
I know, and it's crazy, and that's what Alabama has encountered, because so many of their home games, I mean, their average margin of victory at home is like 25, and so many of those games are over mid-third quarter, and you got, you know, if it's a 2:30 CBS kick, or if, especially if it's the night kick, look, I mean, a lot of people are going to church the next day. Even if they're not going to church the next day, they don't want to sit on 2059 for 2 hours. So they'll bug on out. And, I mean, that's just the way it is when you start blowing. And Nick Saban hates it, and he rails on it. But when you start blowing people out, it's kind of the natural – it's the natural reaction when you get comfortable with that.
Yeah, you make Nick Saban sit in that sit in his car on 2059 for 2.5 hours, and he'll get it.
He'll figure it out. Yeah, he'll figure it out.
He'd understand that he can stream 3 episodes of Game of Thrones right now. all right, let's talk about the actual product on the field a little bit. I know it's awfully early still, but as we jump into it, you mentioned Georgia and Kirby Smart. Is this the year that they finally get over the top? Is this the year that Georgia's playing in the national title game instead of Alabama?
You know, I read that they've got the best defense maybe they've had in quite a while. So Kirby obviously has recruited the type of defense he wants there. My big concern, I think they're good at offensive line. They're obviously good at running back. They always are at Georgia. And Fromm is one of the best quarterbacks in the country. But he has got nobody coming back he's throwing a football to, especially after the Holloman expulsion. I think their next leading receiver had like 20 catches. Actually, the next leading receiver is DeAndre Swift, but a true receiver and tight end had like 20 catches in his whole career. So they are painfully young and inexperienced at the receiver and tight end spot. So I think that'd be an area of concern for them. I still think Alabama will be your team to beat in the SEC, but if you put a gun to my head, I would say it's Alabama Georgia in the championship game again.
What's Tua's health situation?
You know, he missed the Manning Academy because he had a tweaked hamstring. And Nick Saban's going to be asked about this next week, so we'll see what his answer is. But I don't think it's too serious. The only concern is it seems like he's very injury-prone. It all started in last year's Arkansas game when he kind of took a funny hit on his knee. Is actually kind of went to the ground and hit his knee on the ground, and you could tell he was limping. And Alabama never reported this, but it's my belief he got stitches. He had to have a little procedure done, maybe a scope or whatever, and had stitches. And I don't know if many of your listeners are watching this game, but the Missouri game, he slid and he popped the stitches open. So he goes in the injury tent, and he's in there for quite a while. And a lot of fans were scared, thinking he had really gummed his knee up. What I believe was happening is they were stitching it back up. And then they had the bye week for him to get healthy before the LSU game, but he still played with that brace on, and it took him a while to be the same again. He was the same against Auburn. He got hurt again against Georgia. He was healthy against Oklahoma and torched them, and he didn't have his best game against Clemson. But, you know, he battled injury basically the last half of the season last year, and here you are in the offseason with him a little tweaked again. So he missed the spring game last year because of an injury. So I think injury concern is a big, big, big deal for him right now.
Their over-under is 11.5. Isn't that something? I mean, that's 11.5. I mean, the assumption is they can only lose one game. If I told you they lost one game, who's the loss to?
I mean, it's easy to say at Texas A&M if you're one of those that believes this is Jimbo's year. hard for me to see them losing that game.
Yeah, I'm not ready to go there with A&M yet. That's just it's too soon. And they're good, but their schedule's brutal.
Oh, it's brutal. But, you know, they play Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia. Bama's the only one they get at home. It'd be easy to say LSU if LSU weren't awful at Bryant-Denny Stadium, and boy, they are. If that game were Baton Rouge, maybe I say that Alabama beat them 29-0 in Baton Rouge last year. You know, I mean, there's always the Auburn game at the end, and who knows with Gus Malzahn's line. I mean, that's spinning the roulette wheel. You never know what you're going to get out of Malzahn. This could be, I don't see it, but this could be the type of year where he catches lightning in a bottle and maybe he's got a 10-win team. I guess I would say add Jordan Hare just because of the rivalry nature of it. It's at the end of the year, so even if Auburn does struggle breaking a quarterback in, at least he's got 11 starts or 11 games under his belt. So I guess I would say add Auburn, but I don't feel great about that one.
All right, you bring up Auburn. I was trying to decide who I wanted to ask you about next. I'll stay there. It feels like he stays on the hot seat no matter what the contract is. I think at times wanted to get rid of him last year. It didn't happen. At least most people think Stephen Leith, the former president, was sort of his big his security blanket, his advocate, if you will. He's gone. So if that's true, he doesn't really have he's not wearing his seatbelt right now as he goes racing into the season. How quickly could things get ugly at Auburn? I mean, is it week one if they lose to Oregon in Arlington, it starts getting bad right then? Or is there
– okay, yep.
You answered my question.
I think it's week one. Yeah, I think it's week one. And then, you know, very quickly you get into the SEC West schedule. And, you know, very quickly you get Texas A&M. And, I mean, it can go down quick for him. And you know, just a quick history lesson for your listeners that don't know, Stephen Leith was the president when basically Jimmy Sexton worked. He worked him. I mean, Sexton worked him. And he got Malzahn a $49 million contract and a 75% buyout. And Auburn stuck with Gus Malzahn and stuck with a huge contract. And basically, I mean, it was perfect timing for Malzahn. Arkansas was open. He could convince the power brokers at Auburn that he would leave for Arkansas. Auburn was about to have a lame duck in the AD situation. Jay Jacobs was on his way out. He had just beaten Georgia and Alabama and won the West. Everything fell into place for him, absolutely everything. And ultimately, Stephen Leith, the president, was scared to get on without an AD, without, you know, any sort of security blanket. He was scared to get on the coaching carousel. So Jimmy Sexton struck, and he worked him, and he got a great deal for Gus Malzahn. Well, the anti-Malzahn people didn't forget that, and they got their revenge on Leith. He's gone, and they'll get their guy in there. So that was Gus Malzahn's security blanket. He lost a great deal of security by losing Stephen Leith. So if it starts going bad quickly, it could happen in the season. I mean, look, 10, 11 wins saves everything. There's nothing they can do. But if it's less than 9 wins, I think anything's on the table.
Is there one person who just makes sense in that job if it's not Gus? Because they don't like Gus. It's just a matter of time before they run Gus. They want to run Gus. And usually when people get to that place, it's sort of inevitable. I guess if I brainstormed long enough, I'd come up with a coach who sort of staved that off and became the guy, but it's pretty rare. Is there somebody that Auburn's targeting in your eyes? I mean, for the longest time, I thought it was Jimbo. It's not going to be Jimbo. For the longest time, I thought it might be Will Muschamp, but I'm telling you, I'm starting to think he might stay at South Carolina long term. Is there anybody that just jumps out that you go, that's the guy? If you're starting an Auburn hot board, and I can't believe we're doing this in July, but if you were, who is it?
Muschamp would be popular, but you know, you can look at him, check that schedule out, and tell me how he's going to avoid 6 or 7 wins. You know, it's a tough question. It is a tough question. Now, look, like any opening, and I hate to open this can of worms here, but with any opening, Hugh Freeze's name is going to be mentioned. For numerous reasons that
what
I don't think the Auburn
gamble.
I don't think Auburn would hire Freeze. Yeah. There's not an obvious answer. No, there's not an obvious answer. There's not just the guy that is, you say, okay, he would be the heir apparent. In fact, I don't even know. I wouldn't even know where to speculate to begin outside of, well, this guy's good at a school that's under, you know, lesser than Auburn, so you'd hire him. I don't know that there's one that just has that obvious lineage where you would say he would make a he would make the obvious Auburn hire. I think Alan Green, the athletics director, and the old school Pat Dye gang would have to get kind of creative on this one. I really do. And that's another thing that saved Gus Malzahn's line. There wasn't an obvious, you know, at that time, Will Muschamp might have been the guy, you know, a couple years ago. He might have been the guy then, but there wasn't the obvious, this is the guy we absolutely have to hire.
Yeah, Alan Green was at Ole Miss for a little while when Hugh Freeze was there. he would – that would be fascinating. He would
– yeah.
I just don't think he'd go there.
Yeah, boy, there are a lot of reasons. We don't have time to get into for your listeners that don't really know how some of the older fan base operates.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that negatively. I'm just saying for a lot of them, Hugh Freeze wouldn't meet the standard of an older football coach. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and well, that's exactly it.
That'd be a tricky hire.
There's a reason that Auburn's not racing to put beer in Jordan Hare.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of their influential older people, that's just not the way they – that's not the image that they want of their program. I mean, that's my opinion. I could be wrong. It's been a while since I've covered them.
Oh, I think Gus Malzahn wanted to hire him as an offensive coordinator before Freeze got the Liberty job. And I don't know how Greg Sankey was going to view that. You may know better than me. I don't think it was going to be overly positive. But I also don't think a large portion, I'm not going to say majority, but a large portion of the Auburn fan base was going to view that popularly. That was going to be a tricky hire for Gus Malzahn if he had tried to hire Hugh Freeze.
Let me get your thoughts on Ole Miss from a distance, because you keep up with the league really well. It's a program that's been hammered by the NCAA. They're kind of out from the cloud at least, but the wreckage is still around. They're thin in a lot of spots. Their schedule is kind of funky because it's pretty volatile early. It could go really well. It could go really badly. I have no idea, and I'm around the program a lot. Vegas is setting the over-under at 4.5. At first blush, when you hear that number, do you go over or under? And then when you give it some thought, which way do you go?
Yeah, I think both. I think my first blush and giving it thought is over. I think if 5 wins, that Memphis game feels really tricky to me, though. I don't know what the feeling is in Oxford. That feels like a tricky game.
Well, I mean, you know, here's the thing with their schedule. I know you probably haven't studied it yet. Their schedule is just weird because they have to be good early. Otherwise, there's just no path to it. But there is a path early. They open at Memphis. They come home and they play Arkansas at home. Then they get Southeastern Louisiana. Then they get California at home. Then they go to Alabama, and that's a loss. And then they come home, and they play Vanderbilt at home. So there's a path, you know, that's not completely insane to, you know, 5-1.
4-1. Yeah, 5-1, yeah.
You know, I mean, where you beat.
Yeah, look, the...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I looked at that Arkansas game, and that's a game they probably should have lost in Little Rock last year.
Yes.
I mean, Arkansas did everything to give that game to Ole Miss. I think Chad Morris's team is going to be a little bit better. That's winnable. I think Vandy's going to be good on defense, but they're going to be offensively challenged, as they always are. You could have a worse start to your conference schedule. Now, obviously, Alabama's mixed in, but you're going to play them at some point. You could have a worse start to your conference schedule than they've got. I kind of like the way it starts. Now, that Memphis game, to me, is the difference between the over and the under. If you told me the outcome of that Memphis game, I'd know how to bet. You lose that one, it's going to be hard to get to 5. But if they beat Memphis, if Ole Miss beats Memphis, I think the over 4.5 is the play on that one.
Yeah, I'm with you. I expand it, though. I think it's Memphis and Arkansas. I think they have to win both of those games.
Yeah.
If they win both of those games, you're going to beat Southeastern Louisiana. Then suddenly the Cal game's not the end of the world if you lose it, but you're playing with some confidence at that point. Yeah, obviously you go lose at Alabama, you just wave the flag and be done with it. And then you come home, and then if you beat Vanderbilt, well, now you're 4-2 or 5-1 at the break, and that's when you get into the part of the season that you just don't know. Like, for example, Ole Miss is a prohibitive underdog at Auburn if you put the line today. But what if Auburn's chaos by the time Ole Miss gets there?
Yeah, you don't know.
You don't know. So those are the kinds of things. You know, I want to get your thoughts on Mississippi State. The over-under on them is really high. I love the under. They just lost so much on defense. and they have to replace a quarterback who I know wasn't a – Nick Fitzgerald's not going to make a bunch of money quarterback in the NFL. I get that. But he was a really dependable, tough college quarterback who won a lot of games for them.
I felt like Joe Moore had never could figure out what to do with him, though. It felt early on like Moore said, I know what you do well, but I got a system, and I want you to play in that system. And Fitzgerald didn't fit. And then it might have been too late. Moorhead realized, okay, here's how we're going to do this. You know, he's not fitting into my system. I'm not real comfortable coaching why he fits in the best. So we're just going to do some sort of hybrid here and do what we can. And, you know, I guess he was successful with that. But, I mean, obviously it's hard to look at what he did, bringing in Tommy Stevens, and think he felt great about Keaton Thompson. So, you know, that's such a question mark there. I hear people say, oh, Tommy Stevens, he's comfortable with him. That is going to be great in his system. My fear with Mississippi State is that you just missed such a good window. I mean, when are you going to have three first-round draft picks on defense at State? I felt like you missed a golden opportunity having the best defense in the country and not getting any more out of it than you did.
Yeah, that's where I am. I mean, it's hard to get three first-round draft choices on your defense anywhere. Anywhere. Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, you don't get it at those places all the time. I mean, I don't know. It feels like to me their schedule is pretty favorable, and their schedule has a lot of wins built into it. I'll give Arkansas this. I do love the return to the throwbacks. Have you seen the uniform?
Yeah.
The uniform does look really nice.
Yeah, and they've messed with their uniform a lot over the years. I think they've got a good one they can stick with in that one. Just quit messing with it. Quit. The Petrino era seemed like they had a lot of uniform changes.
Yeah, Petrino liked to experiment in a lot of ways.
I've heard about that. Yeah.
Is there anybody in the league? Give me this real quick. Give me the team that you think is at the end of the year is going to be the surprise team. And at the end of the year, the team we're going to say that was the big disappointment.
Yeah, I don't know. There is beginning to be so much momentum for a Missouri surprise. So many people are high on Missouri. I don't quite see it because I'm not. Like Kelly Bryant was a nice quarterback at Clemson. I just don't know that you. He had elite NFL talent around him at Clemson. I don't know that you're going to get that at Missouri.
Yeah, I'm on this train, and usually when I'm on the train crashes. But I'm on it in large part because I've talked to some NFL people, Ryan, who say that they've kind of got NFL prospects all over that field. They really didn't lose anything other than Drew Locke and Bryant.
Yeah.
Bryant's played in big games. It's a fall off, but it's not going to be as precipitous a fall off as maybe it normally would be.
Yeah, and this isn't a huge surprise because they won 10 games last year, but I've got a good feeling about Dan Mullen in Florida. Now, I'm a Dan Mullen guy. I think the guy can coach. Felipe Franks, while he didn't just put up Heisman numbers at the end of the year last year, he go look at his touchdown interception over the last five or six games. He protected the football. He made good decisions. I think Dan Mullen's a good quarterbacks coach, and I think Felipe Franks will thrive under him. Obviously, you'd have to get through Georgia. And the cocktail party, but I think this can be a pretty good Florida team. And the good news for them is they're out of conference. Is Miami week zero, who I don't think is going to be great, and Florida State, who's kind of down right now. So if they catch a break, I mean, normally you have Miami and Florida State on your schedule. You want to, you know, what you're thinking. This is the perfect time to have both of them on the schedule. So I kind of like Florida. I kind of like Florida to be a little bit of a surprise team.
Who's your disappointment? Who's the team that at the end of the year were like, man, they really underachieved?
Well, I mean, I think if people think A&M can contend for the West, that's a disappointment because I don't see any way they're going to beat Georgia, Clemson, or Alabama. And then you've got to play perfect ball and not to end up with four losses. And I think if at the end of the year, if you have them at 8-4 at the end of the regular season, based on what I'm hearing about Texas A&M, I think that's going to be a huge disappointment for people. So I'm not a believer in A&M being that type of team that's a 10-2 type team contending for the West. I think they're more of an 8-4 team that loses the games they're supposed to lose and then drops one that's a toss-up.
A lot of people in Oklahoma City are going to be cheering for whoever Russell Westbrook plays for. Is it going to be that way in Alabama with Jalen Hurts? Is it going to be, hey, everybody's for the Tide and they're also cheering for the Sooners? How What's his legacy at Alabama?
Boy, it's tricky. Here's another thing we talked about on the show today. Is Jalen Hurts a top 10 quarterback all time at Alabama? And I think he is. And fans are still fond of him. They still appreciate the fact that he wasn't a distraction last year. He handled all of that with a great attitude. And when his number was called, he came in and played all out and helped his team win a conference championship. So he'll always be beloved for that. And I think as long as Alabama's not having to face him in the playoffs, everybody will be for him. I think it would get tricky. Still, Alabama fans think they got the better of the two quarterbacks, and they do. But if you meet him in the playoffs, all of a sudden there's probably some different feelings about Jalen Hurts. But I think by and large, people want to see him go there and succeed, as long as it doesn't come at Alabama's expense. So, yeah, I don't think there's some that will say, oh, he quit on the team. But I think by and large, people want to see him succeed there.
Is he an NFL quarterback?
I think he's got to throw the ball a lot better. He made great strides under Dan Enos last year throwing the football. Enos worked wonders with him. If he could do that under Lincoln Riley, who is obviously a very good offensive coach, maybe. I mean, I think he's got the size to do it. He certainly has the arm strength to do it. It's always been accuracy with him. But he was much more accurate in the times he played last year. Now, he was set up for success. He's coming in against gas defenses and games that have already been decided, with the obvious exception of the SEC championship game. But when he came into that game, he was terrific. So,
he was the difference. They weren't going to win that game until he came in.
Oh, no. That game was over with Tua in it. Yeah, he could barely walk. I mean, to the point that he had to have surgery the next day. I mean, his leg was hurt to the point he had to have surgery. So, I mean, I don't know how you play quarterback on that with your plant leg.
Yeah, the thing with Hurts, I'm just kind of – see, I think he made – and he handled it the right way. And this is not an insult at him at all. His decision to stay at Alabama, I think, was a little more calculated than people give him credit for. I think he looked at it and he said, you know, I'm better off doing the grad transfer thing. And I'm also better off staying here. I'm going to get good coaching. I can work on my passing game. He knew he was going to work with Enos, who's got a pretty good reputation with that. I think there were a lot of things that went into his decision to stay that went beyond, oh, it's the right thing to do, and it's going to make me look good and all that stuff. He knew he wasn't going to beat out Tagovailoa. I think he kind of knew what he was doing. I mean, I think it gave him some time to sort of survey the country, too, to figure out what would be the best fit.
And in a rare situation, it really worked out well for everyone. And I don't think anybody lost in this deal. He came out looking good. It benefited Alabama. You know, Saban, I think everyone looks at that and says Saban treated him about as fairly as he could treat him. So I think, you know, in a rare situation, everyone was pretty unselfish, and it actually paid off for everyone. So maybe that's a lesson. Maybe that's a lesson in those types of deals.
Probably is. Well, I've kept you long enough. I really appreciate it. Last thing, I'm curious. You went through this with the Nationals last year with Bryce Harper. The Nationals have sort of climbed back into striking distance. They've played pretty well since an egregious start. As a Nats fan, do you want them to run the risk with Anthony Rendon if they can't get an extension worked out between now and the 31st, or do you want to see them trade him and get value?
It's a great question, because to be a legitimate playoff team, they got to address middle relief. So if you say you're going to keep Rendon, you got to go get some middle relief. You know, if you're not going to keep him, it's kind of silly to keep him, also not get middle relief, and then you lose on everything like you did with Harper. So I think I'm the dream scenario, obviously, is keep him and go get some middle relief out of this and try to do something in the playoffs, because they've got maybe the best starting pitching in baseball. Rendon and Juan Soto, they hit the ball well right now. And they got a great closer in Doolittle. You just don't have the middle relief.
And they've got the starter to win a wild card game. I mean, God, nobody wants to face Max Scherzer in a one-game take-all.
No. And Strasburg's been terrific. He was good in the Cubs against the Cubs, you know, two postseasons ago. Had a tremendous outing and extended that series till the Cubs tore their heart out. Patrick Corbin has been terrific. Anibal Sanchez, who they got off the track heat from the Braves, has been terrific. The pitching is – obviously, pitching's not an issue on the front end. It's the middle relief. And I think they hit the ball well enough. If they had some dependable relief to get to the backside of the bullpen, I think it's a team that could do something. They could win the wild card, if not track the Braves down. But I don't think you can – you can't lose Rendon. You can't lose Harper and Rendon in back-to-back years. That's too much to lose.
Yeah, and not get and get nothing for them. No, you've
yeah, I mean, you've got nothing for Harper. Yeah,
yeah. If you determine that you don't believe Anthony Rendon is going to sign an extension, you have to trade him. But the message that sends through your clubhouse, I wouldn't want to be their general manager right now. I really wouldn't.
Well,
I mean,
and you're dealing with Scott Boras. So you know you know who's got the advantage in that deal.
Well, you know, it's funny. I would have said that until this past offseason, where some Boras clients didn't get. And I know it worked out ultimately for Harper with the money and stuff, but
yeah, but he didn't get what he thought he was going to get. He got less money than Washington offered him.
And it took him a long time, and he's not having a good year.
Yeah.
It's been proven that these free agents who sign late, it's just they are human beings. You're throwing them into really stressful situations as opposed to letting them get acclimated, and everybody gets their families moved, and they get all the stuff done that you need to get done so that you can focus on your job. And Boras it's kind of screwed some guys. I'm watching this with Chris Bryant and the Cubs, and Bryant still has a couple more years under contract. And the Cubs keep talking about, hey, we want to extend him. And then, you know, Theo Epstein sort of makes these cryptic remarks the other day about, you know, he was asked about are the Cubs going to go out and improve their team. And he said, look, everything's on the table. If we don't start playing better and more consistently, you know, everything's on the table, including some major transactions. And a lot of fans at first took that to mean, oh, the Cubs are going to try out to go out and get, you know, Trevor Bauer or Rendon or whoever the hell. And I took it the other way. I thought, no, it's not what he's saying. What he's saying is if they can't consistently look like a team that could beat the Dodgers in a 7-game series, and he doesn't think he can keep Chris Bryant around or you know, Kyle Schwarber around or whoever the case may be, you're going to see a big move happen. He's going to get a stable of young players to sort of replenish his system in exchange for a former MVP. I thought that's exactly where that's going. And I took that as subtle a shot as a baseball executive can take across the bow at Scott Boras.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And back to your point on Rendon, you can't lose two massive free agents back-to-back years. It's just that's not sustainable for your franchise. You've got to – if you're going to lose those pieces, you've got to get something out of them. And they could have gotten a ton out of Harper. In hindsight, you know, they felt they could sign him, obviously, for what they offered. And ultimately, their offer was the best offer. You know, you've got to remember that. In hindsight, that first offer they gave him was about as good as it got for him. So you can't do the same thing we were doing. You either got to trade him or sign him. I mean, he actually will benefit more from Harper's deal than Harper, maybe, because he is in such a good spot with the Nationals now.
Yeah. He's a great player, and he's a better player than Harper.
Oh, yeah, I love Rendon.
He's
yeah,
a better player than Harper, in truth. I always wonder what – I'd love to have some truth serum with Bryce Harper and wonder what he thought when he realized in late November, early December that – the Yankees weren't going to be involved. The Mets weren't going to be involved. The Cubs weren't going to be involved. The Dodgers really weren't going to be involved. The Braves weren't going to be involved. All these teams that I think Bryce Harper had been led to believe were going to get into a bidding war for him really never even flirted with him.
Yep.
It had to be devastating.
The Nationals handed you and the rain delay on the final day of the regular season was about as good as it was going to get for you.
Yeah, and he had to go to a place where previously he had said he really didn't want to play. And Philly's just a different kind of market, and not a great market for him. And he hasn't had a very good year, and he's on this look. He's got generational wealth. No one's feeling sorry for him, but you do have to play in it. You know what I mean? I mean, you do have to.
Yeah, you do have to
show up and every day endure it. And all you had to know about the Philly market was Mike Trout, who's from there and who cheers for every Philadelphia team religiously, said, nope, you know what, I'm going to stay right here in laid-back Anaheim.
All the way across the country.
Yeah,
all the way across the country.
I'm going to stay right here. I don't want any part of that. And it told me a lot about what some players think about that market. And I always have liked Bryce Harper, so I kind of felt bad for him when it didn't work out better than it did.
And here's the thing. If you're Harper, you know you don't have a tradable deal now.
you've got to make it work in Philadelphia. It's not like they can trade you. My God, that contract? Could you imagine trying to trade that contract?
No one would touch it. No one would touch it.
Yeah.
You're
going to be miserable for a long time if you can't get this thing straight.
And those contracts hover over you as a player. I mean, I watch the Cubs every day, and this is the first season. So Jason Hayward's been a Cubs. This is his fourth year. This is the first season that he has looked comfortable. It's all contract related. He's putting up the same numbers that he put up in 15 in St. Louis before he signed this big deal, and it's all contract related. You can tell he's finally comfortable. He's finally calm. He's doing well enough, and they found different people to boo. They're not booing him anymore. They're booing, you know, Yu Darvish or Tyler Chatwood or whoever the hell. They're not booing him anymore, and so he's gotten to relax a little bit, and now he's back to kind of being the old Jason Hayward, putting up pretty respectable numbers, and he's a gold glove outfielder, and everything's cool now. But, I mean, his contract is it's a pittance compared to what Harper's is, and Harper has this big personality, and it's a decade-and-a-half deal. Again, generational wealth, and no one's feeling bad for him, but it just can't be all that happy of an existence.
No. Look, all of us would love to collect that check every the 1st and 15th, but there is something that does go along with that. He's going to start hearing it. If he can't bust over 240 for that kind of money, I mean, you better hit over 300 with 40 homers, or they're going to boo you in Philly.
No doubt. Well, listen, man, I kept you more than an hour. I'm sorry for keeping you so long. I appreciate you spending some time with us. I look forward to seeing you in Birmingham next week.
Yep, we'll be there, man. Look forward to it, Neil. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan.